Well, welcome back to Shifting Schools, where today we dive deep into the world of student motivation and engagement. Have you ever wondered about the connection between motivating students to do the work we need them to do and how it is tied to the assessment strategies we use in the classroom? Well, we are thrilled to have the insightful Tyler Rablin with us, sharing wisdoms from his new book, Hacking Student Motivation, 5 Assessment Strategies That Boost Learning Progression and Build Student Confidence. I'm so excited to have Tyler back on the podcast. In fact, this is Tyler's 13th episode he's been a part of here at Shifting Schools. Today's episode focuses on the last 10 years that Tyler has been thinking with and experimenting with the overlap of student motivation, assessment, and feedback, all of which have led to the writing of his new book. From the significance of learning progressions over traditional rubrics to the transformative power of giving students control over their educational journey, we're discussing the strategies that Tyler talks about in his book. If you are like me and can't get enough of Tyler Rablin, or you want an even bigger taste of what's in the book, you can head over to shiftingschools.com and under the resource tab at the top, click on webinars. There, along with more than 20 other webinars, you'll find 2 from Tyler on feedback and assessment, along with the slide decks and handouts for those webinars. So if you can't get enough of Tyler after this episode, make sure to head over to the website for even more. That reminds me, seeing you'll be at shiftingschools.com, make sure to take a look at our PD offerings we have coming up in the month of April. Between workshops at schools and conferences, Trish and I found a few days to offer some AI webinars for those wanting to learn with us. On April 9th, you can join us for a 75-minute webinar on AI-fueled feedback, which would be a great follow-up to today's episode and Tyler's book. Then, on April 16th, 17th, and 18th, we are doing a 3-part webinar series where we will be discussing 3 strategies for AI literacy conversations in your classroom. April 16th will be focused on how you can take a human-centered approach to AI. April 17th will be focused on how to use AI to bolster executive functioning in emotional literacy. And April 18th will be focused on how to merge media information in AI literacy into an engaging learning experience for kids. Of course, by being a podcast listener, you can save $25 on both webinar series by using code SSPOD25, all capitals, at checkout. Of course, more details and registrations over at shiftingschools.com. All right, before we jump into our talk with Tyler Rablin, let's take a moment to thank our show sponsors. Thank you for tuning in to Shifting Schools. Let's pause our discussion to spotlight Libra HQ, a breakthrough in using AI to deepen connections within organizations. Imagine an environment where every staff member feels truly seen and valued. This is the heart of Libra's mission. Libra transforms how leaders celebrate and recognize the personal and professional milestones of their team members. It's not just about reminders. Libra's AI dives deeper, offering insight into enhanced team cohesion and promote a culture where support and acknowledgement are paramount. Picture a school where every individual is acknowledged, from work achievements to personal victories, creating a culture of appreciation in just minutes a day. In these challenging times, where the demands on educators have never been higher, Libra offers a way for school leaders to lead with true empathy and compassion, ensuring every team member feels an integral part of their community's success. Discover how Libra can revolutionize your school's culture. For a demo, contact me at jeff@shiftingschools.com. Let's build a future where every educator and staff member feels connected and valued. And now, let's get back to our conversation. And without further ado, I'm super excited to have Tyler Rablin back on the show and to talk about his new book, Hacking Student Motivation, 5 Assessment Strategies That Boost Learning Progression and Build Student Confidence. That is already a number 1 in Amazon under educational professional development. Enjoy this conversation. And with that, on with the show. All right. Welcome back to Shifting Schools. I can't tell you how excited I am to be here with my good friend, Tyler Rablin. I've got a smile on my face because it's always so excited to see you, Tyler. And usually because, and I don't know if you know this, almost every episode you're in ends up being our number one downloaded episode of the year, the last couple of years. So, you know, I have you on for no other reason just to bump our downloads on Shifting Schools, because it just seems to be the way it happens. You're just, you're so articulate in your thinking and the stuff that you're doing in your classroom. And I'm so excited. We're going to talk today about your brand new book. As we are recording this, it's literally been out, what, 3 days, 5 days, something like that?
3 days, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Tyler has written a brand new book called Hacking Student Motivation. And if you've followed anything that Tyler has done over the last 5 or 6 years, this really is a culmination of everything you've been working on. Over at Shifting Schools, you did 2 webinars for us at Shifting Schools that you can still find under the webinar tab over there. I know you've been doing conferences. I mean, I left the comment, my Amazon review was like, I've been watching this book through conference sessions for 5 years, and it's great to see it all come together. So Tyler, thank you for being here. And I'm so excited to dig in a little bit more about your book, Hacking Student Motivation. But before that, for people who don't know who you are and why I'm so excited, can you give us just a quick background of just where you're coming from and why the book? Why now?
Absolutely. So I am a high school ELA teacher. I still have to say that this is my first year out of the classroom, and I have a really hard time starting with that. But I'm a high school ELA teacher. All the work that I've done around grading and assessment and feedback, it was kind of practiced in those 10 years that I was in the classroom. And then in the last year, this year is my first year transitioning fully out of the classroom. I am now an innovative learning coach. If you look at my contract, it's an instructional technology coach, but
I just changed the name.
Yeah, just it was instructional tech sounds like IT, and that was not what I wanted to do. So so now I work with teachers really looking at ways to take the learning that we already do, the good learning that we do, and find ways to use technology, to use brain science, to use kind of innovative practices to magnify that impact with students. So that's where I'm at now in my, I guess, my day job. I spend some time outside of that getting to work with other schools around, a lot of times around grading and assessment. That's really kind of my heart and my passion. That's what the book is sort of born out of. It's called Hacking Student Motivation, because when we talk grading and assessment, the reason we need to talk about it is because we need to talk about student motivation and the barriers that sometimes schools can build to the motivation students have inside of them.
I love that. Can you talk a little bit, because I think this is one thing that I've always loved whenever I have conversations with you, is this idea of motivation, assessment, and feedback. And I know you've been huge into feedback. And in the book, you talk about a lot of the hacks that you share in the book also revolve around how powerful and how feedback, I don't even know how to say it, like, that feedback is the assessment. Like there, that is part of the entire thing. Can you kind of talk about, like, in your mind, when you think of motivation, assessment, and feedback, how do you kind of see those? What's kind of like the picture or the vision that you have around those three things?
So I think for me, when I think feedback, a lot of times we narrow the scope of what we think feedback is, right? We think like it's just the comment that I leave on the page, or, you know, the little marks that I put on a student test. But really, I mean, the more broad definition of feedback is anything someone can use to gauge their progress in relation to a goal. So there's a fantastic talk called Can Skateboarding Save Our Schools? It's a TED talk. And one of the things he says, he's a skater, he's also a physics professor. And he talks about how in skating, your feedback is when you try to do a kickflip and it hits the ground and you smack your ankle on the board. Like, that is feedback, and it tells you this is what I need to adjust for next time. And so when I think about that, virtually everything we do with students in the classroom is an element of feedback. And so when I think about it more broadly, I mean, we have students in our classroom who some of them have this very confident academic identity, but most of them are still building that academic identity, and they don't really know. They're looking for ways to figure out, who am I in terms of a learner? and they're looking at everything in our classroom. And so often the things that they look at determine, do they believe that they can do it? And when I talk motivation, like that is the core of motivation. Does the student believe they can do it? If the answer is no, that motivation is going to plummet. And it's not, I think so often we, when we see that the motivation drops off, we think, oh, this is a student being, you know, disobedient or not complying. But really, for a lot of students, when they lose that motivation, when they act unmotivated in the classroom, if you were to ask them, do you believe that you can do it? Their answer is no. And so it's not necessarily that they're trying to do something to disrupt what's happening in the classroom. They're doing something to protect their energy, to protect their identity, to protect their ego in some sense. Because if I know I'm not going to be successful, it's pretty hard for me to go out and try that anyways. If I know I'm going to fail, then I'm just like, you know what? This is where I'm at. And so for me, when I think about feedback and its relation to motivation, it's really on it's not giving praise. It's not just kind of throwing this false confidence out there for students, but really saying, hey, look, I want you to look at what you did. Here's evidence that you were successful at this piece. Maybe it's a really small piece, but a lot of times that's what students need. If they don't have any evidence of previous success, they won't believe they'll have future success. So my goal with feedback is I'm trying to say, hey, look at this. This is where you were successful. Now let's look at your next step where you can build on that. And that's to me the big link between feedback, our assessment and grading practices, and motivation.
And how have you, I mean, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your school population, because I don't think many people know exactly where you're teaching and where you've put in these 10 years of really digging into these different assessment practices, this idea of where you've seen motivation because of assessment and feedback. So can you talk a little bit about like your 10 years of teaching, the social makeup of your school? Because I think that's important for people to know. And then maybe even a story of where have you seen this actually impact students? Like where do kids come in and are like, yay, I've got Mr. Rablin? Or they come in and like, oh no, he's going to make me think.
So I've taught all my whole career. I've been in typically rural agricultural communities, which oftentimes ends up being kind of important in the motivation element of school, because most students see their path to success, not most, but a large chunk outside of school, right? Like you've got a family that they own a farm. That's what the kid's going to do. School is kind of like, why would I care about school? You've got
everything I need to learn. I can learn out on the 200 acres or 4,000 acres or whatever it happens to be. Like going to take over the farm and be a farming family.
Yeah. My school is from 3 to 8. That's, you know, a lot of students, like I'm going to go, that's where I'm going to learn the things that will help be successful. And so, in that context, when there aren't quite as many opportunities around, this is why I had to really think about motivation. Like you have students that come to school and it doesn't align with where they think they're heading or the goals that they have or the goals that their family has set for them. And so I really spent a long time thinking about what is my role here? How can I tap into the motivation that students have? Like, I think that's oftentimes you hear so many people say these kids just aren't motivated. And I always try to pause people there because they are just maybe not motivated towards the things we want them pointed towards when it comes to the classroom. And so that was a lot of sort of the context around where I did all this work is looking at, you know, for a number of students, and I think this is true pretty universally right now, but there's a large chunk of our students, no matter where we're at, who are like, this approach to learning, approach to education, this school piece doesn't fit where I think I'm headed, doesn't fit with my values. And so my goal was to say, A, how do I help students see that it does? How do I change my practice to make sure that it does? And also, what do we know about brains in general? And how can I tap into that with my grading and assessment practices?
I love that. God, that's so good. You know, your book, one of the things that I really appreciated, and I've always appreciated this with you, but your book does not shy away from acknowledging how we are in this new era of education. In fact, we were just at a conference together where you were doing a session around AI and assessment. What does that look like? Can you say more about why this book is a reflection of the context in which we find ourselves in education now and why you feel like this is a really good time for a book like this and why teachers should go and buy it.
Yeah. So a little context for me is going into, let's see, for 4 years, I was an instructional tech coach. And then I spent one class period in the classroom. I did that through that sort of the year of remote learning. And when we transitioned back into hybrid, and to be honest, it sort of burned me out a little bit. And so I just wanted to get back in a classroom with kids. So I jumped back and I was fully in the classroom. I was teaching my freshmen again. And I felt it, and everybody I talked to felt it. There was a shift in, I use the term like the social contract of school. Mm. Like something felt like it shifted there, and teachers couldn't really put like their thumb on it. And one of the things that really stood out to me is, so I had a student who I had taught previously. I hadn't seen him for a couple of years. They were a junior when they came back, and I was talking to him and I said, "How's it going?" And they got super sheepish. And you know, like you just have that sixth sense as a teacher where you're like, something's up. So I'm like, all right, what's going on? So I pull up his grades while he's there. And he was a kid who, when I had him as a freshman, like doing great, A's and B's, really, really motivated to engage in school, things like that. And when I checked as a junior, like super low GPA, D's and F's, some C's maybe. And I asked him like, what changed? And he said during online school, he got his first F. And for him, that sort of shattered his identity of who he was in terms of school. And it just made me realize that, and this is where I mean like this social contract is the way that we motivated students or attempted to motivate students through grades was such a fragile element of how schools operated. And we saw that all of a sudden when something changed or broke with that, there wasn't really much motivation behind that for students. They didn't know where they were heading, except that people, adults in their life for so long had told them, get a good GPA so that you can go to college and then you'll get a good life. Right. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, now I don't have a good GPA. And all of that just came crashing down. And so the book really looks at how do we build this deeper, meaningful motivation that's rooted in students understanding their value, their worth, their growth, their success, and really seeing that as a reason to continue engaging. I like to, oftentimes we think motivation has to lead to action.
Yeah.
And we always think that, right? Like we have to motivate kids to, you know, threaten them with grades. Yeah, exactly. When really, like for a lot of students, if we can give them a reason to get going on it, even if they don't feel motivated, that starts building that motivation. When they see like, I started that, I was a little bit successful at that, like I'm working towards a goal that's meaningful. It's that process, but typically it starts with, hey, we got to engage in this first. And all of a sudden, let's make sure we've built a system where kids can look around at what they're doing and go, I'm doing it. Like I've got evidence that I'm doing great. I've got somewhere that I'm going towards.
I love that. I want to give listeners a little sneak peek of what they can look forward to in the book. Because one of the things that every time I go to one of your sessions, I am still wrapping my head around. I am still in my own learning journey, but see tremendous potential around the moving away from rubrics to learning progressions. And you're huge on this, and you've been using this as a motivation around assessment with your own students. Could you maybe just tell listeners a little bit of what they'll find in the book and why this move away from rubrics to learning progressions, which I think is just, it's so huge in everything that we're doing. You know, we've been pushing rubrics forever in education. Like, look, it makes rubrics. Everything does rubrics. Go buy a rubric, you know, and a lot of what you're talking about in this book is moving away from rubrics into learning progressions. Cause so can you maybe talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah. So for me, rubrics and learning progressions are two different tools for two different pieces of learning. A rubric is valuable at the end of a process to if I'm checking to see how well I understand something or to determine the quality of a task that I've done, a rubric is valuable there. As a teacher, if I'm doing that grading a rubric is helpful for me to keep sort of that iterator reliability if I'm working with a team. So a rubric is helpful at the end. Where I started to have issues is I was trying to use it at the beginning. And if you think about your typical rubric, like let's say it's on, I don't know, complete sentences. Basically, there's three levels that say you suck at this and two levels that say you're good at it. Like that's just how a rubric, we want to pretend that that's not what it's saying, but that's really what it's saying. And so if I'm using that at the beginning, and a student is starting off saying like, I can't do that. Like that's the first thing that comes and success feels so far away for them. That's where that motivation barrier often comes in. If a student feels like that the cost of being successful is too high, they're not going to go for that benefit of actually learning it. And so I started playing with this concept of learning progressions, which I actually got some of the inspiration from. Ohio has their learning standards extended, which they designed for special education, where it takes standards and really looks at what does it mean to unpack the complexity in this. And so I took that and thought, why would we only do that for a group of students when every student could benefit from that? And so a learning progression takes that the goal, the learning goal we want for students, and it unpacks it backwards into a series of steps that if a student gets stuck along the way, or if they're starting out, maybe that first step is simply three vocab words that they can use to then engage in the conversation about that learning. But that gives the students, no matter where they're at in that learning journey, a place to say, my learning is reflected here. Like my journey is valued, even if I'm at the very beginning, because I have something I can say, I'm successful. I can do this. This is a really close goal. So, I mean, I think I say in the book, and if not, I'll say it here. Like if someone asked what is one element of my classroom I could not give up, learning progressions are it. They ended up being the foundation of my classroom. We would start class by looking at it, spending some time saying, where are you at? Where do you need to get to next? Let's do a little bit to get you there. We would finish an assessment and students would reflect to say, where am I at right now? Before an assessment, students would say, what's my goal? What do I try to do? And so that all really became like everything we did was centered on these learning progressions.
And I see so much of myself as a learner and as a teacher in what you just said. You know, I can remember this idea of being in classrooms where the thought of, and we didn't have rubrics back in my day, but just the thought of getting an A was so out of reach, right? I was just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do all of that. And so I'm instantly putting myself, you know, the 14-year-old me and even the 47-year-old me into a mindset of just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. Right. And so then we start to back off on ourselves and we put ourselves at a deficit. Right. Mm-hmm. And I can see that in kids. I can see kids looking at a rubric and saying, that's a five. Well, there's no way. I don't even know how to do this. Like it's day one of the unit or the concept or whatever it is. And you want me to get there? That's just not going to happen. I also think about it from my teacher standpoint. And we've been talking about this, you know, quite a bit, that, you know, the pendulum shifts in education, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And we're coming back to this idea of inquiry-based education, project-based, problem-based education. And one of the issues that I'm hearing a lot of teachers say is, well, we tried this before. And the problem is, and I think this was a big problem before, because I was that, all right? Project-based learning is the only way I know how to teach. And I thought about that when I've gone to your conferences and just hearing you think again, every time I hear you, I'm just like, I want to be back in my fourth grade classroom, because I would do these large projects, right? We do project-based learning, these large projects, and I'd have a rubric that we were trying to do this large project and you were doing that. And I would assess along the way. It would be formative feedback along the way. I would encourage kids along the way. But I would love to be able to go back and say, here's project-based learning. Here's the rubric that we're all going to get to. And here are the different learning progressions. Like, here's a learning progression. I know you know nothing about geometry because we're just starting the geometry unit. But we're going to start at step one and we're going to move from step one to step two and step two to step three. And you're going to see yourself moving down this path when we're talking about shapes and polygons and, you know, three-dimensional shapes, two-dimensional shapes. And you're going to be able to see yourself grow as we get to the end of the culminating activity, the project, whatever it happens to be, that the rubric will be there for. Do you find that if you do this, like, and I'm just, this is me, if I would have that level of assessment and feedback and conversations and being able to support kids in the process of learning, by the time I get to the end result in the rubric, I've got every kid meeting or exceeding grade level.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that? I mean, is that true? Is that kind of what you see? Like, if you've got that kind of, like, you've set up a structure now to support kids in getting there instead of just saying, go hit a five.
Yeah. And part of it is because so often, like, if we're talking a rubric, the vagueness of levels in the rubric means if I'm at a two, I don't know how to get to a three. Like, I don't know what my next step is. And for a lot of students who are struggling, that pause requires a teacher to show up and they're waiting, and it really slows things down. I always love the story that I think of. There was a student that I had in, this would have been about 5 years ago now. He was brand new to the country. Spanish was his primary language. And here I am asking him, and the school in general, asking him to engage in learning in English.
Yeah.
And he was really struggling. But this was one of the first years I really leaned on learning progressions. And I could see him in my class, like, he couldn't yet sit down and write a full essay in English. But this first step in understanding, you know, how to develop complete sentences was, can you identify nouns and verbs? And he was like, I can do that, because, like, he had plenty of Spanish education. And so he was like, all right, I know what this is. And he did it. And then we got to the next step and the next step. And I have this letter that I still have. It's probably the most accessible letter that I have for the days that I need to pull it out, where he just says, like, I didn't believe that I could be a good writer until you showed me. And the part that always sticks with me is, like, you showed me. Not, I didn't tell him, I didn't give him, like, compliments. Like, I literally said, this is the process that we can go through. Let me show you how you're successful at each step along the way. And it's that experience that really drove home for me, like, this is important for all kids, but especially a student who comes to our class with gaps in understanding, or with language gaps, or who just struggles in the content. Like, this is so important for them to be able to see that you are learning and successful, as opposed to you're not there yet. Because I think that's, for such a large group of our students, that's the message they get. You're not there yet. You're not there yet. As opposed to saying, with this piece, you are there. And I think so many kids need to hear that. Like, this is where you're successful now. Let's look at your next step.
I just want to let that sink in for everybody, because it's so true. I think it happens a lot in schools. We know. I mean, we all know that kid. You know, we all know that kid. For my next question, I want to quote your book, which is always the worst, because then you have to answer it. But I want to leave this question with a quote from your book, where you write, and I quote, "When I think back to the responses my students have given over the years about how grades and assessments have impacted them in their academic careers, and when I think about the amount of harm they tell me it's caused, how could I refuse to do something about it simply because I still have to compromise a little bit at the end of that journey? This is the point of hacking. We may not necessarily be able to change how the journey ends, but we can make the journey so much more valuable for our students and ourselves along the way." In many ways, I think about your book as a big thought partner in thinking big and small about the power dynamics in the classroom and in education at large, right? I mean, this is something we know. We've been talking for years that assignments and assessments are broken. Did power as a concept feel important to you as you drafted the book?
Yeah, absolutely. And this came from, so when I talk about, like, the responses students have given, I did, when I was in my classroom every year, not at the beginning of my career, I was still figuring a lot out at that point, and I still am, but I learned to ask my students three questions, and I would give them a form at the beginning, and then we'd talk about it. And it said, do grades help you learn? How do grades make you feel? Why do teachers use grades? Mm-hmm. And when I sat down and looked at those responses, so often what I got from students is, when it came to grading, they felt helpless and powerless. And, you know, I know we want to say, yeah, but the grade's in their control, they just need to put in effort. But what we say and what we want it to be, if it doesn't match the experience students are really having, and if they're telling us, hey, we feel like we have zero control over this process, that's where we need to pause and say something's broken. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like motivation, one of the least motivating spots we can find ourselves in is an environment where we feel like we have no control. And for a lot of students, school is not a place where they get to experience much control. And when it comes to grading, if the student feels like they don't control that outcome, then why would they engage? Why would they put in discretionary effort above and beyond to when they feel like it doesn't really matter? And so for me, like, power is a huge component of all of this. When I talk about feedback, the first thing I do when I think about feedback is I ask students, what do you want feedback on? Mm. When it comes to discussing where they're at in their learning goals, that's a conversation that I want the student actually involved in. And we'll talk about it because I want them to know that, like, you are the most important part of this process, right? Mm. Like I can do all the research I want. I can spend all these hours on lesson plans and assessments, but when it comes down to it, the student needs to know you are the most important part of this process. And I found that the best way I could do it is ask them, what do you need? Mm-hmm. What do you want? Where are you at in your learning? One of my favorite questions is what learning did this assessment miss, right? Like, mm-hmm. letting kids say, hey, I didn't do well on this test. Here's what I know. And mm-hmm. it helping them feel like I am valued. What I have to offer is valuable.
How long did it take kids in your class? Like, I just imagine myself sitting in my high school ELA class and my ELA teacher coming up to me and saying, so what would you like feedback on? I'd be just like, what? You want to know what? Did it take your kids a while to be like, well, I don't know. You're the teacher. Like, to get them involved in that process. Like, how long of a, like, just learning for kids is it to get it, to be involved in the process with you?
A while. And even like, yeah. There's a long time where they don't believe me. Like, sure. I'll say, like, we're going to sit down and talk about where you're at in your learning, and we're going to use that to determine your grade. They're just like, there's no way, right? Like, they just think, like, that's not how school works. Like, you go behind some magic curtain, and then you throw a grade back at me.
And 3 days later, you give it back to me with a score. That's how school works, Mr. Ravlin. I don't know if you've been here long enough to know. I hand stuff in, you give it back with some magical score, and I'm supposed to accept that score and move on to the next assignment.
Yeah. So it takes a while. One of the things that I really started doing, though, is at the very beginning of the class, we would have this process where I would have three really quick assignments back to back that are connected to the same learning target, the same essential learning we're focused on. Students would turn in the assignment. I would ask them, what do you want feedback on? I wouldn't put a grade on it. I would sit down with them. I got into doing learning conferences. That was the main way that I would give feedback to students. And so we would do some really kind of abbreviated learning conferences, and then they would get a chance to revise it and do it. And then we'd sit down again and I'd say, let's talk about, this is the learning progression. Let's talk about what you've shown. What have you shown me here? And so really early on, I think it was like a moment of disequilibrium for kids. Yeah, where they're just like, hold on, this isn't normal. And I needed them to get in that place, because otherwise they'd just be like, well, the way school works is I turn in an assignment, I get feedback, I throw it in the trash can, and a grade shows up in PowerSchool, right? Like, so that was, and I needed them to be like, something is going to change and feel different. And so I found that experience really early on to sort of throw them a little bit off their base of what they assume is how school works was one of the best ways to sort of speed up that process. I taught debate. Many of their debates in that class was, you have to argue to me what grade you deserve and why. And they were like, no, that's not really going to happen. And I was
that's not how school works.
Put your debate skills to test. Like, this is the best way that I can see if you're learning what you need to learn. Like, can you convince me of what grade you need? And then we'll sit down and look at the evidence that matches with that. But it takes a really, I mean, there are kids that just, they don't trust that that's actually going to be how it works out. They think at the end of the term, you're going to tell them I've lied all along and here's your grade. Right. You have no say over it. So some kids, it takes the whole term. I taught freshmen and I had them all year long. And I appreciated that, because when their trimester one grade came out, they realized like, oh, I was actually involved in this. Like I was not surprised at the end of the term. I knew exactly where things were. And so then the next two trimesters, we were kind of off and running and they really understood the process.
Wow. Yeah. Cause I can only imagine I just picture myself going, I don't know what I need feedback on. Like, I haven't even thought about it. I just did the assignment, Mr. Ablin. I have no clue.
I need feedback on what grade.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I could just see that. I could see that. So, well, Tyler, thank you so much. Talk a little bit as we get ready to wrap this up. How good does it feel to be done with this book? I know you've been working on it for years, to finally have it out in the wild. to have other educators downloading it. I think we were talking before we started recording, over 200 downloads of the Kindle version already. Congratulations on that. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right book at the right time. And I just strongly encourage everybody, though, of course, there'll be links to Amazon and everywhere else you can buy the book as well. But just talk about what these last 2 years have been like putting this book together for people.
I sat down like 2 years ago and wrote almost all of it in a trailer in a week, and then spent 2 years just going, that's not good enough. That needs to be more precise. I need better examples for teachers. Like I've read so many education books that I really had spent some time thinking about what was the most valuable thing for me in all of those. My poor publisher, like I refused to let it go and put it out there until I was convinced that it was something that was going to really hold value for teachers. So to go through this whole process and then finally in the last few days, have it out there. It's been surreal. I don't know another word, but to think about like the last 2.5 years of all of my heart, my brain, my energy that I've poured into this book is now out there, and to get some feedback from people and hear that it's already helping teachers. I don't know if I have words to describe it. It's just been a really cool feeling.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, my friend. It has been an honor to be on that journey with you. We've had many a conversation about Tyler, when's the book coming out? Tyler, where's the book? Tyler, let's keep this. Let's get this thing going, buddy. You got to get this thing out there. So, I'm excited. It is also, I think we were talking, it's rated number one in professional development right now. You can head over again. The link to Amazon will be in the show notes as well. Or just go to Google and just do a quick Google search for Hacking Student Motivation, 5 Assessment Strategies That Boost Learning Progressions and Build Student Confidence. Tyler, thank you so much for spending some time. I know you are busy. You're going to be even busier after the book came out. So I appreciate you spending some time with us. And hopefully you don't get so big that you won't be willing to come back on my little podcast and continue to talk about this stuff. We'll make sure that there are links to Tyler's social media. I will still say on the X or Twitter or whatever we call it, you are still, man, you drop just straight quotes over there all the time. I mean, that if you're not following Tyler on X/Twitter or whatever we're calling that thing now, is that still where you primarily hang out over there?
Yeah, that's where I share most of my resources. Is yeah, still over
awesome.
There.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Again, go get the book. I promise it'll be worth the money. You can download the Kindle version, or there it is out in paperback over on Amazon and probably in multiple other places as well. So Tyler, thank you so much for taking time today to talk about your book.
Thanks, Jeff. Always enjoy getting to talk to you.
As always, folks, thank you for tuning into the Shifting Schools podcast. I do want to let you know we received feedback from a few fellow listeners who were asking if Jeff and I were going to offer anything specific on AI and feedback. So we've taken your feedback on, and coming up this April, we are offering AI-fueled feedback. This is a 90-minute webinar on April 9th. We have it priced at an early bird rate from now until March 5th. So please head on over to the show notes, learn about our early bird rate and learning with Jeff and I this April. You can also find more on AI-fueled feedback by heading over to www.shiftingschools.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week.